Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Passionate Living. I have such a special and extraordinary show for you tonight. As we always share, that when I created this show, it was my deepest desire to bring to you the people, the pinnacle people in the world that are making a difference. Somebody who is life evolving, life changing. Somebody that has the keys and the tools and the techniques and the secrets and the doorways and the windows and the pathways to a different way of life, the unlimited life, the life that's the heaven on earth, the life that we always know is in front of us, that we're meant to live, that we're meant to evolve to, that we always know is possible. And when I met Michael, I was literally so taken by his heart and his spirit and his soul and his commitment to the planet and to the world and to everything that you and I dream and desire. He has been striving for and working for and on this pathway. And it was interesting, I was reading his bio and it says that he is an echo warrior. And I love that idea of being an echo warrior, somebody that is fighting not only to make a right, not only to make a difference, not only for the heart of humanity, but somebody that is taking care of the planet in the process. So he's a conservationist, he's an adventure program photographer, and the way that he views life through his lens is beautiful, and it's perfect, and it's glorified because it's a place of peace, and where we're all together, and where all life matters. And so I'm honored, and I'm privileged, and it is a joy and a pleasure to bring to you tonight's guest, Michael Bailey. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Nicole. This is wonderful.
Oh, it's so great having you here. So one of my favorite questions to ask people on the show is always the did you know factor. The when you were 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and other boys wanted to be astronauts or firemen or whatever it is that they wanted to be, was there something in you that was drawn to helping others or drawn to helping the planet or to animals or to creation, or did something happen in your life that flipped and opened that door and all of a sudden you stepped through?
Combination of both. My main passion was seeking adventures, seeking the fullness of life. I was a scuba diver in my late teens, around 17 years of age. I began scuba diving in the Pacific Northwest and currents and deep water areas and fast moving cold environments and high seas, that sort of thing. So I became a photographer in my teens and built my own underwater camera housings and that sort of thing. And then I hopped on a project, an endeavor with a group of people called Greenpeace that was just a small number of humanity trying to come together, trying to save the whales. And I knew a little bit about how to run an outboard motor and an inflatable boat and how to keep things happening in the oceans a little bit because I'd been a water person. So I hopped on that movement and rose to being the youngest board member in the organization's history and running expeditions to help save the whales and seals and dolphins around the world. But it was passion that drove me. It was a passion. But for me, it was originally a seeking of a great adventure. And then that transformed into, which I already had a connection towards nature, but raised as a child in a fairly wonderful natural environment of rainforests and shore life along the Pacific Northwest. But it converted to actually being empowered, the idea of knowing that one can make a difference. And it was that self-empowerment of understanding how one can make a difference to help protect endangered species, make the world a better place. That's what really fueled me. I combined my quest for adventure, my passion for the environment, with the third factor being self-empowerment. And that self-empowerment managed to kick it into high gear.
Wow. That's so extraordinary. And I love the fact that you picked up photography, and that because that's an additional eye.
Exactly. I mean, you mentioned it, seen through the lens of the camera and the lens of the human eye. Yes, I mean, the lens of the camera captures these images that we see upon our computer screens and television stations and on motion pictures around the world. And that was has always been one of the main planks in the platform of being a conservationist, to protect nature, is educating other people, doing outreach, exposing the lies and the untruths, exposing the beautiful nature of the environment, exposing the horrors. And using the camera lenses to do that's important. And there's also the human eye. The human eye sometimes can see things differently. The human eye can see things, nuances that don't necessarily come across upon the television screen. Human behavior patterns, the good, the bad, the ugly, the greatness that we can be and the lowest that we can be can all be seen with both the camera lens and the human eye in different ways. So through the years, I managed to pick up skills with both those structures, both formats, the camera lens and the human eye. And I managed to push me forward, continuing to this day, trying to protect nature and try to make the world a better place for all.
I love that. Okay, so I just want to go back for just a second, because you talked about the dolphins, you talked about the seals, and people see dolphins and they see seals, and it's kind of like a warm, fuzzy, lovely feeling. But I know that I was reading, you know, in your bio that you actually filmed a video that documented the shark population.
Yes.
In a quest, really, right, for the sale of their fins, to be able to save them from that. And that's crazy wild.
Yes, I've done it many times. Undercover video exposés of people trafficking, trading with sharks and shark fins or baby seal pelts or dolphins themselves. I was involved pretty heavily with a movie called The Cove. It picked up the Academy Award in 2010 for Best Documentary. It was regarding the killing of dolphins in Japan, the mass slaughtering of dolphins in which the entire sea would run red with their blood. And it was an expose upon the mercury contamination of dolphin meat and how people were being fed dolphin and large fish such as tuna. And that seafood, shall we call it, is laced with mercury and PCBs and other chemicals that are hazardous and toxic to human beings. So I was involved with doing the exposés on that to a certain extent and supported this movie extremely much so on the Cove movie. I was doing the media PR campaign in Japan and elsewhere. And that actually helped create not just the Oscar for that movie, but create a larger scale movement to deal with this issue of pollution upon the oceans and the seafood that we eat, and the need to be cautious and aware of all aspects of the environment. So I'm pleased to have been part of that so far.
That's great. You know, the Academy Awards really take a step forward to being able to recognize cinematography, new visions, new dreams, a new way of presenting a story that's an age-old story. And the fact that this would be an Academy Award winner and an animal rights documentary says that it's groundbreaking, says that it's done something that nothing else has done before in being able to share a story that reaches people in a really profound, riveting way.
Exactly. That was a story that needed to be told. And actually, it was Luis Sahoyos, the director, who's a close associate, who managed to do the expose and show the world what's happening. And we were collaborating on the aspects of the campaign itself, the educational campaign, the outreach, the media aspects, and the expose aspects of it. We were looking very deeply behind what types of messaging can be given to the world public to grab the world's attention, to capture the media's eyeballs, to capture television coverage, and to be able to bring it to the public's attention on a large-scale level, because it's not an easy thing to do. We're bombarded every day, every moment of every day now with our mobile devices and television media, radio media, whatever it is, of information streams, and it's difficult to capture large swaths of the human consciousness unless you've orchestrated a thought concept behind it all, a way to be able to access the human psyche, which is what we did, what was done. And that actually helped propel that movie to receive the Oscar, receive the Academy Award. But that's something that, of course, we can all do in our lives if we're aware enough. And that's something I'm quite keen upon now, is to have human beings around the world understand the need for our own self-awareness so we can see the world as it is, we can experience the full joys of the world, we can see the sorrows at time, and be able to accept them all and be able to move forward with our own lives with success towards helping our own families, our communities, nature, the environment, making the world a better world for all. That's the primary goal right now.
It's so beautiful and it's so brilliant. And I know that I was reading that you've spent a good portion of your career braving the wilds of nature. And I love just the image of thinking about that to really make points about the planet. And so what is an adventure program photographer? What does that mean to you as you step forward and share these stories throughout the world?
Sometimes means working days that are twice as long as the average person is what it sometimes really means, because it sounds all great and groovy on the on one side, but it takes a lot of work to make it happen. It takes a lot of skill building, technology building, refining one's own personality, refining one's insights, be able to go out there and make a difference. And that's an important thing to understand. For me, it's the thrills, the exhilaration that comes from interplaying with nature, interplaying with the environment, interplaying with my fellow human beings as we experience the joys of nature, being with whales underwater, with dolphins, or just simply being with beautiful flowers and trees and birds, and having those senses, having that sense of nature come to us. You know, there's actually been some studies done in recent years on a situation called NDD. We've heard of ADD, attention deficit disorder, yeah? NDD is nature deficit disorder. There's actually our studies done by well-ranked universities in the United States and across Europe that if human beings, if we lack contact with nature, it actually will create stresses upon us, on our minds and our consciousness and our dream state. And there's actually other studies that have been also done that shows if we have contact with nature in beautiful ways, we're an improved human being. Our brain waves physically will change depending upon our contact with nature. So I'm in favor of everybody getting in contact with nature to help us all become a better species, a better society, better human beings, better families, better all around by being in balance with nature the way it's supposed to be.
Phenomenal. And I know that you were one of the co-founders of Greenpeace. And Greenpeace was really one of the forerunners. I mean, they were kind of a leader in a movement, in a change, in an acknowledgement, in a recognition of the fact that there's another way of life, or there's something out there, or there's a way to connect to the planet in which people have never thought about connecting before, and that we were all really part of one energy and one entity. And so what was that like for you at that time?
Well, for me, it was very special because I was the youngest person in my crowd at that point in time. I was involved with Greenpeace before I could fully shave, and I was what people call an original member, and was mentored by its grand guru, a fellow named Bob Hunter, who was a media mind bomb type of chap who would write news stories and articles and press releases and things with a total magical touch. And I was fortunate to have been mentored by him, and as has been a number of other people that are now global conservationists that are doing very good work around the world. And that was a very exciting time and a very exciting moment. It allowed me to understand that the need to be able to take images around the world and put it in front of the human consciousness to create change, and also to create a living, because in order to do conservation work, like anything else, it takes money and resources. And in my case, I was able to convert photography and filmmaking into a business enterprise, into a career, and managed to merge both my passion and what I needed to do to simply maintain a living.
What incredible journey. I mean, truly, you've seen it all, and you've just literally moved forward, moved up, moved out, and taken the heart and spirit and soul of what you've seen. And it's one thing to be a photographer and to take beautiful pictures. It's another to see something happening in the planet, to see a horrific situation, to see an injustice, and to notice it, to recognize it, but to actually take that information out to the world and to wake people up. I don't know if you've ever heard my story about that when I was in nursery school, how I would never, ever, 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 ever nap. And not only would I not nap, but I wanted to wake up all the sleeping kids so they play with me, and they had to put me in the yard. But what I realized a couple years ago was that when I was four, I knew exactly what I wanted to do, which is to wake up all the sleeping people so they play with me. I just now have a platform to do it. And I now spend my life traveling the world saying to people, wake up, why are you sleeping? And so I love the fact that you've taken this information and you share it at such an incredible level, and through cinematography, through film, through images in which people can capture and that are captivating and that draw you in. And so I look forward to hearing so much more. So we'll talk about Kuwait. We'll talk about some things that you're doing currently right now when we return here with Michael Bailey on Passionate Living.
What?
Hi, it's Nicole Brandon. Welcome back to Passionate Living. We are speaking tonight to Echo Warrior, Mike Valley, about amazing adventures, heartfelt information, a cry from the planet, and his incredible work, which is absolutely profound, awe-inspiring, and awakening to what's out there, and allowing us to be able to reach humanity in a different way, our visions and goals of a better life and a better world in a different way, and an awareness that we've never had before, because he actually goes to places that people have never gone. He's actually going under the sea to photograph. He's actually in these incredibly dangerous, adventurous situations, and takes the humanity and the heart and the spirit and the soul from these places and shares them with you so you can have them in your heart, in your spirit, in your soul, and realize it's part of all of us. And I know, Michael, right before we went to break, I was saying that we were going to talk about Kuwait when we came back. And I know that you went there to protect oil-soaked seabirds and wildlife. Tell me about Kuwait, that experience.
Well, indeed, that was a war zone. That was a terrible war zone involving Iraq and Kuwait, the Persian Gulf, and it involved oil-soaked beaches, and it involved the oil-soaked seabirds, and it also involved helping people, helping humanity, bringing in medical supplies, flights, and food to the people that were the refugees of war. And it was these massive oil fires and these burning oil wells that were that resulted from Saddam Hussein and insane method of warfare, which was destroying the environment. And that's something which I was integrally involved with. And I'm pleased to have been integrally involved with dousing the oil fires and bringing together environmental understandings of what it took to be able to cap the oil wells and be able to make it a better, safer place for human beings and animals. And it was getting into these difficult areas when you're dealing with something like war, in which case there were 100, maybe 200,000 people, at least 100,000 people that were killed in that war, maybe more, maybe 200,000, maybe beyond. It can harm the human soul. It can scar us in many ways. And it's something which we need to be aware of, that the difficult challenges of the world, just because we're living perhaps a decent life ourselves, does not mean it's universal. I mean, there's very difficult situations human beings face, and animals face, that the planet faces. And I believe it's actually partially all of our responsibility to at least look and sometimes even take action, to write a letter of support, to do something with ourselves, to take an action, become more aware of what's happening. And it expands us, makes us a stronger, better, more resilient human being. There's no doubt about that. So as a result, I actually encourage people to explore the world, and even sometimes the shadow sides, the harshness, and of course not necessarily dwell there, but come back to the happiness and the joy that's in the world too. But in turn, we can expand ourselves. And that's what I was doing in the war. I was definitely going to the harsh situations, but also the joys of knowing that we can actually make a difference, protect birds and wildlife, help people, and make some light shine upon a dark area of the planet.
That's incredible. How do you know to go? Like, is there a bell that rings? Or do you watch the news and see a situation and say, I have to get on the next plane? Or does somebody call you and say, we need help here, SOS, and can you come join us? And how does your heart, spirit, and soul know when it's time?
All of that's true. Sometimes the heart and spirit and soul has a drawing towards a certain situation. Sometimes it's, say, opportunity comes in where there's a phone call, a message, I need a camera person, I need your help, we need to get this situation resolved, and your skills are needed. It depends on what's exactly happening. Then it comes down to being that great quest behind making a decision. Should I go or should I stay? Do I have the resources, the funding to make it happen? Do I have the organizational support to make it happen? What is it that I can actually do? And that's something which I think is part of the quest for our own inner voice, for our own inner sense of knowledge. And sometimes we have to override our passions, you know. Oh, yeah, let's go swim with the whales and the dolphins or do something great and groovy. But sometimes we have to basic work and make things happen in other levels. I think one of the classic examples behind how magic can happen was, for me, was I did a project once in Japan This is way before we were involved with the Cove, but I was very aware of the dolphin kills in Japan. It involved taking an award, a statuette of a whale, to go give these fishermen in Japan who'd saved a small whale's life. They rescued a 20-foot-long whale that was in a net, set it free, and it received some press in Japan, some news media coverage. And so I decided to go over there and create an award and gift to these fishermen in Japan for their environmental awareness, for the fact they had compassion for this whale that was caught in their nets, the fact that they didn't turn it into fertilizer, didn't carve it up for dog food or pet food. And that received amazing amounts of press and media coverage in Japan. And what happened was just a week after that, out of pure serendipity, pure magic of the universe, shall we call it, just a week after that, a whale washed ashore dead at the same village we were in, the same small village that we were in Japan that we awarded these fishermen. And it washed ashore dead, hadn't happened there in probably 100 years. And we decided to do a traditional funeral rite for a whale, which was something which was done many decades ago in Japan, before World War II. People would actually give rites, funeral rites to whales. It was part of the Shinto and Buddhist philosophy of Japan. And that received live television coverage on several networks in Japan. It was seen by probably 30 to 50 million human beings. That was a very positive thing, a very joyous. It was respecting the whale's spirit and soul, respecting the environment, coming together, cultures from the West and the East. It was all very positive and good. So that was something which just happened because I was there on site. And so to me, I saw that something took us there, which was awarding these fishermen, and then a little bit of magic came into play. A little bit of serendipity occurred that allowed this strange, unusual, unique event to happen and unfold in a beautiful way. And that's sometimes the nature of taking action. When we take action, sometimes we aren't sure of the outcome, or we aren't sure of what the opportunities that might lie ahead, but by taking action, things can occur if we're aware enough, and if we're centered enough and calm enough to look for those opportunities and not be perhaps overwhelmed by either our fears, our doubts, our anxieties, our passions, or whatever. Too much passion can cause us to be blinded too, you know. So it's, for me, it's getting that balance behind to make a decision in a calm, measured way, being fueled by the passion, but still try to get a sense of the right thing to do.
Wow. What an remarkable, incredible journey. And when you talk about do something. You know, if you're drawn to do something, do something. If you see something, make a difference. And I know that so many times people say, what can I do? I don't know what I see this horrific situation. I see horrifying things on the planet. I see entire species disappearing. I see the filth. I see the dirt. I see the oil spill. And I would love to talk just for a second, because I know we're going to go to break in just a minute, but about animal testing, like even people buying shampoo or makeup or whatever that is, so many of our products are animal tested. And that's something that people can do in their own market, in their own daily life. With
self-awareness is the first step. Self-awareness behind what is it we're consuming? What is it that we're eating? What is it that we're doing to the planet as a whole? What is our energy consumption, right? Just by becoming self-aware is a massive step towards making the planet a better place and becoming fully whole, self-aware human beings that are able to make change and difference. That's a very important factor, Nicole. You've touched a very important thing there. Self-awareness behind what it is that our impacts, just by our living here on the planet Earth, what are the impacts that we're making? Both negative and positive.
And I know right now you're working on a very exciting new project, and I can't wait to talk to you about it when we come back from break. And I love all this work that you're doing. It's just so beautiful and so important and so powerful and so rich for the Earth and for our future and our future's future and the why we're here and the how we're here and life, the quality of life and the quality of life for all living creatures, whether it's our plants, whether it's animal population, whether it's any living mechanism, organism, and how we actually breathe life and peace and joy and humanity and connectiveness, which elevates us into that heaven on earth that we're all striving for on this planet and in this world. So more when we return here on Passionate Living with Michael Bentley.
Life's beginning. become so bland. It seems like the theater screens that block the changing scenes, and life goes on whether I choose to pay or sit and stay and participate. There's no pause but.
Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome back to Passionate Living. We are speaking today with Michael Bailey, eco warrior, conservationist, adventure photographer. All of this information to me is absolutely riveting. It's so profound, and I think I'm more excited talking to you than I have been in a very long time, because I feel movement. I feel change with what you're doing. I feel life. There is a surge of knowingness that this is right. And I found two words on your website and an article that I was actually reading about you that talked about collaboration and cooperation.
That's very essential. Collaborating, cooperating is one of the most important things we can do as a society, as a species, as families, as people that want to have good friendships. Picking up the skills and understanding the need to collaborate and cooperate is essential. And it's very difficult. You know, you look at the fact that relationships in general are rather challenging at times, and add to that the stresses and anxieties of trying to perhaps do something to help save nature, et cetera, or trying to do something that's outside of the box, shall we say, that's unique or different, that's challenging. It can add stresses and strains to anybody's relationship, both on a coupling level, but also on a group level, on family levels. And that means we need to communicate clearly and concisely. And collaborating means we're able to give and take and share. And sometimes it means simply providing the leadership it takes to lead people to in the right way, in the right pathway. It's a very delicate balance, knowing how to use all those aspects. And none of us are experts at it. We're all in the process of learning that, because the human relationships are always changing in all of our lives. But nevertheless, collaboration, cooperation is so important. And when we come together for a higher purpose, when we come together for a purpose that we're trying to help make the planet a better place for our children and grandchildren and for the species we share it with, my sense is that makes us better people as a whole and allows us a little bit more elbow room, shall we say, a little bit more flexibility in how we can cooperate with each other. Having unified purposes that are outside of ourselves is so important.
As we talk about collaboration and cooperation, you're actually working on a project right now that actually personifies collaboration and cooperation, the World Conservation Congress, which is coming up.
Exactly. The World Conservation Congress is coming up. It's happening this year in Honolulu, Hawaii, from the 1st to the 10th of September, with even some advanced events happening some days in advance of that, just the end of August. It's the first time in its 64-year history that it's been convened in the United States of America. It's an international congress. It's open to anybody. Anybody can come and attend. It's be attracting people from over 140 countries. There'll be people of all ages, from children to adults to the retired individuals to educators and musicians to artists and celebrities and just people that just want to see what's going on and how they can make a difference. The World Conservation Congress, hosted by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, which is the world's oldest, longest-standing conservation group. And I'm involved with that, putting together a venture called the Digital Media Campus. One can see that on our website, planetviews.org. Simply go to www.planetviews.org, and you can see information there on the Digital Media Campus that we have, and see information on that same website regarding the World Conservation Congress. But it's fantastic that it's coming to America at last in Honolulu, which is a beautiful place, and provides opportunity for people to get together, learn, engage, dance, sing, and make the world a better place for all.
Sounds brilliant. I want to go. I absolutely want to go. So for those that are listening, and this is new information, I mean, we have people that are listening to this in all these countries from around the world, and many of them are just opening up to new ideas and new thoughts and new consciousness and new ways of living and knowing what's possible out there. And so for someone that this is a new idea, can you share what a conservational congress is?
Well, this happens every 4 years somewhere in the world. Last time, 4 years ago, 2012, it was in Korea, and 4 years before that, it was in Barcelona. And it requires a country or a state, in this case, it was the state of Hawaii, and the government of the United States of America to extend the invitation for this Congress to land in the United States. And it brings together people that are interested in protecting nature, from the smallest of plankton and slime mold to the largest of creatures like the great whales and the elephants and the rhinoceros, and all aspects of nature and environment, as well as educating people, expanding new levels of education, expanding new levels of cooperation. In our world, with our digital media campus on the planetviews.org website, we're using digital media, modern technology tools to educate people and create communities, create networks of humanity. They're able to unify their energies for the common good of all. And that's one of the main things that the Conservation Congress does. It brings together people from the far corners of the globe with unified purposes in order that we can all explore how we can all make the planet a better place for all.
And as you're sharing this, I read somewhere that you are an advocate of effective microorganism technology. What is that?
Effective microorganisms. Well, for those who are gardeners out there, indeed microorganisms are used to advance nature, especially regarding cleaning up our water supply. Bacteria used on farms for waste disposal. It's used in organic farms to create great vegetables and produce. Microorganisms and earthworms. There's actually it could be said, actually, that earthworms have a higher value to the planet than dolphins and whales do, because earthworms form the soil that allows us to breathe and eat. Same with microorganisms. Microorganisms break down the biological matter and reprocess it into beneficial matter that eventually forms our food supply, creates oxygen for the earth, and creates the balance of nature that everything relies upon. So in microorganisms, sometimes there's parts of the world where the soil is denuded, it's been washed away, the topsoil has been stripped off, or there's been water that's been polluted by our effluents and that sort of thing. And it can all be healed to a certain extent, to a great extent, by having active microbes. And there's science that is still unfolding now behind different types of microbes that do different things. But for the most part, most of these microbes are basically beneficial to human beings in many ways, too. I mean, I know people that drink microbial mixes, right? Probiotics. Probiotics are often positive microbes for the human body. And we basically have our own bodies in some way a microcosm of the planet. I mean, we breathe. Our lungs are, shall we say, like the trees of the earth, right? Our bones are like the firmament, like the soil and the rock. And our brains, well, we may be the brains of the planet, right? There's 7 billion of us on the place on this earth right now, 7 billion human beings, and we should be using our common unified human mindset to make the world a better place for future generations. Simple as that. That's the sign of an intelligent person. So microorganisms are very important to the world. Elephants are important to the world. And human beings changing the way we think is very important to the world.
I love you talk about elephants. And I know you've provided a lot of footage for National Geographic. And I would love to talk about Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Because when you talk about elephants and we think about large animals, and I imagine that must have been something so fascinating.
Yes,
to
indeed.
Be part of.
Yes, well, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is viewed as being the Serengeti of North America, where there's massive caribou, a herd of tens of thousands, up to 100,000 caribou will migrate in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge every year from the slopes of the Arctic Ocean down 1,000 miles to Canada and the central Alaska. And it forms a very essential part of the entire food chain for wolves and for polar bears and for other creatures. And it also, for grizzly bears actually sometimes. And what it also does, it helps realize how beautiful Earth is, especially when it's relatively untouched by human beings. If we are so fortunate to go to places of the planet where the environment is not touched and harmed by human beings, we can sometimes see such amazing life forms, abundance of life. In the case of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, its coastal plain happens to have some oil under it, and that is, there's been a major push for many years now for that oil to be drilled and denuded, which would basically destroy the caribou, would destroy their birthing and calving grounds, and would also destroy the way of life for native peoples of northern Alaska and northern Canada. So as a result, I've been involved with that issue. I've got some friends in Alaska and friends in Canada who are indigenous people, native peoples, and I've been working to support them and their village life and what they do, as well as supporting the intrinsic nature of just trying to protect the biological system itself, the caribou, the wolves, the muskox. Protecting nature in the high Arctic is very important. And actually, the Arctic forms a very essential thing for us that we don't sometimes realize. It's in some ways the canary in the coal mine, shall we say, where it's by watching the way the ice melts and the way the temperatures change in Alaska and in Canada, the northern Arctic Ocean. That determines in many ways what will happen and what is happening to the rest of the world. So we need to protect our Arctic remote areas as much as we want to protect our backyards, because eventually we're all part of the same ecosystem. Eventually our children and grandchildren will need all the water and all the air that all these creatures and plants are creating. And that's very important for us to be aware of. We're all part of this system.
We are. And I know that you've done a lot of campaign initiatives, and you generated news media coverage on CNN and the BBC and the New York Times and Reuters and Discovery Television, Animal Planet, and on and on. And I know that you were also graduated from Al Gore's climate program, right? His climate change program.
Exactly. I've been trained by Al Gore in the world of climate presentations.
And so for those that are listening to all of this and saying, can I make a difference? Can I make a change? Where do I begin? Where do I start? The world's not safe to bring children into. The food is not safe to eat. How does someone begin to make a difference?
We begin somewhat in the same way that I did that project in Japan, where I first went over there to award these fishermen and then found that magically a dead whale washed ashore that resulted in this funeral rite and a religious spiritual experience for many people and was seen by tens of thousands of people on television. Totally unexpected. When we decide we want to start moving in a certain direction, we decide we want to start a recycling operation in our homelands, we decide we want to have an educational outreach to our children in schools, we decide we want to do something, things can fall into place. Part of it also comes down to being our own self-exploration, analyzing what is my motivation, what can I do, what is my limit, what might be my limitations, and how can I get beyond my limitations, whatever it is that we're seeking for. And we can start off what many people might view as being small steps, but those small steps can become larger steps and larger steps. As we improve ourselves, as we improve who we are, and as we build community who are in simpatico, who understand and appreciate us. And all of that's important for us to do. So even though people may be frustrated, honestly, the world is such a beautiful, magnificent place. I think we need more leaders of the future. And I think what we need to be doing with our children is it's not necessarily say no children, but make sure that the children that come forth or in this world are educated as good as we can make it, that understand the need to protect nature, that are responsible for future generations. We need new types of human beings on the planet, and the best way to start is with children.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, as people are listening to all of this, I mean, you're phenomenal, absolutely incredible, and there's no doubt that the work that you're doing is just making such a beautiful difference on the planet and the world. And for those that want to follow your adventure, your journey, your story, see movies like No Man's Land, which was The Porpoise Cries, or some of the films that you have out there that really touching the hearts of humanity in an incredible way, or would love to have you come speak or come film their events, what's the best way for people to find you and reach you and part of your work?
You can contact me via, you can Google me online, Michael Bailey, environmentalist. I pop up on Wikipedia, but you can also get me at planetviews.com, planetviews.com. And for the World Conservation Congress, planetviews.org. That's our nonprofit branch. And people can simply go online and Google those two words, Planet Views and Michael Bailey, and it'll pop up. You can find me easily. And you can find members, and you can join us. You can join us online. We're going to be doing some live webcast broadcasts in the World Conservation Congress. We'll be doing other broadcasts of other forms, possibly additional programs even on Nicole's show. You never know. But main thing is that people can get involved themselves, and they can look at us, find us online, and extend ourselves, stretch ourselves. Do something every day, a little bit more, a little bit more. Say, I'm going to try this recycling. I'm going to try this education. I'm going to go attend this meeting. If we do something like that, every step, every small step becomes a bigger step. Before you know it, we're playing the game in its full spectrum. It can easily happen for all of us.
I love this. Well, this information, I think, is so important for people to hear. And if you're looking to make a difference in the planet, I would follow Michael. I mean, what an incredible, this is better than any movie or any television show. It's this great action hero. You're like the James Bond of ecology or something like that. And it's just fabulous for people to be able to hang on to that, to be part of that, to see that, to envision that, to feel that, to dream that, to know it's possible to make a difference in the world and to go into the nooks and crannies of the world and see where a difference needs to be made and to touch those areas and to help those areas and to love those areas and support those areas and to take whatever the problems are and bring them to the light so people know they're there so they can be healed, so they can be helped, so they can be supported, so they can be transcended and they can be transformed. The work you're doing is just, I mean, Eco Warrior. You absolutely deserve that title. It's so brilliant. And I can't wait to share more when we return here with Michael Bailey on Passionate Living. Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome back to Passionate Living. We are speaking today with Michael Bailey, conservationist, adventure program photographer, eco warrior, and we're talking about the world and everything that you see, everything that you're drawn to, everything you bring to the light, everything through your lens, through your vision, through your photography, through your mentoring, through your passion and your heart and your desire. And one of my favorite questions to ask guests, since this show is called Passionate Living, is what does leading and living a passionate life mean to you?
Trying to live your dreams is what leading a passionate life is. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean living your fantasies. Okay? It doesn't necessarily mean trying to dream something that's beyond our scope, that's beyond our capability. But sometimes we have dreams and visions that may take some time, and that requires patience and fortitude. And these are good skills to build up, because sometimes we're accustomed this day and age to have instant gratification. I want this now. I want this now. And we get be distracted by that, because it sometimes takes some time to take the steps to passionately live in this world of conservation and loving nature. Is to be in nature at times, is to advocate for nature, is to find something that one can do, to recycle one's physical possessions and trash and garbage, to help organize and discuss, even if it's an online community on Facebook, whatever it is, that helps structure people to do something better for the planet as a whole. This is very important. We need to seek our passions and make it happen. But it also comes down to being for myself. My passion comes from the fact that I was willing to take it step by step to do projects and finally become a photographer and underwater diver and then market myself to get expeditions and do everything from saving the whales and the dolphins with Greenpeace and then the Cove movie picking up the Academy Award to Kuwait and the Gulf War. You can find me on the cover of the August 1991 National Geographic magazine, The Oil Fires of Kuwait. There's a photograph of myself trekking there in the Arctic in the hot oil fields of Kuwait. And then shortly after that, the next 6-7 months later, I was off to the high Arctic. So these things can happen for us, but they can happen for us if we take things a step at a time. And we don't all have to become, of course, great global adventurers. We can have adventures in our own backyard with our families and friends and loved ones by simply trying to make a difference, by simply doing something that breaks us out of our ruts and that sort of thing, breaks us away from our standard daily routines to try to do something a little bit different. And that means we have to find that courage, that little bit of spark inside of ourselves, have that nurtured, and have others around us that are willing to nurture it with us. Be aware of the naysayers and be careful of those that say, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. Because you can take the advice, perhaps, but at least I sometimes take the advice to a certain extent. But if I really feel passionate about something, I try to make it happen and be willing to accept failure sometimes. Sometimes things don't work out exactly where you plan them to be. But as long as you stay on the general course for myself, that's been very important. So I think that type of advice that I find is universal, and we all need to do it because we need to make the planet a better place for our children, grandchildren, future generations, and for the creatures we share the planet with. Because really, the planet is not in a healthy situation. We've got toxic chemical in the seas, plastics floating around being digested by fish. We've got polluted air. We've got the ocean is becoming acidic by all the carbon dioxide that's dissolving the sea. That's going to change the way coral reefs grow and destroy coral reefs. There's numerous environmental issues that are happening because the planet's never faced all the impacts that we're now giving it as an industrialized species. So we all need to make a difference and balance our consumption properly and balance our education. But through that, we can find passion easily because we're making a difference. And that's what the human soul enjoys, is making a difference. I'm sure of that.
That's great. So I have an odd question to ask you. As we're coming to the top of the show, I want to talk about photography for a minute. So most people carry phones that have cameras now, and we are a generation of selfies. So I would love some guidance for people to turn the lens the other way and to actually capture nature and the world around them and what's captivating. Can you offer any guidelines or guidance into that world?
We can start in our backyard with bumblebees, because bumblebees themselves are declining in population around the world. There's great concern about regarding bumblebees, as well as for the birds and the animals and the grass and the trees that surround us in all of their myriad ways. So we can turn the camera on, and we can sometimes take a photograph of us together with them or whatever, or with our family and friends. Having people message other people in this world regarding nature is an important thing. There's a close friend that's been involved with a book called Blue Mind, for example. Blue Mind, the book analyzes the fact, proven scientific fact, that human beings, when we just see images of water in the ocean, and we even sometimes just see the color blue, that our brain waves will change in a more calmer, centered fashion. The same thing as I mentioned before, earlier in the show, regarding being in nature. There's been studies done, elaborate studies done, called nature deficit disorder, whereby if we're away from nature, we become more agitated, less centered. So be in nature. Plan to take nature as if it was a medicine, right? Take nature and be with nature and take our family and friends and children and let them become nature beings. Children that are raised with nature, on average, and again, there's studies done on this, one can Google it online, that there's studies done on that nature and children go together, the child, on average, has a better chance of being balanced in many ways. So this is important for us to understand. We are nature beings. We have the lifeblood of the planet flows in our own veins, right? We're made of the same substance that the planet is. We're all star stuff. And for that, we need to be responsible star stuff and keep this planet around for future generations.
That's great. Now, I know that people say that you're an eco warrior. And to me, Michael, you're an eco hero. You really are. You're an eco hero. And as we wrap up the show, I just wanted to ask, so many people say, what can I do? I'm only one person. I'm only one single person. And there's so many problems in the world and with the planet. And so how does someone become an eco warrior? How does somebody take a stand? Move forward, follow their heart, follow their dream, make a difference in this world.
We make a difference starting right now, right here, making a commitment inside of ourselves that we want to make a difference. That commitment is the first step, the commitment of thought. And after that commitment of thought, other things fall into place. They can contact us, of course, at planetviews.org or planetviews.com. We'd be more than happy to give them information on what to do and what they can get involved with. But there's numerous other sources in this world also regarding that. The first step is inside of ourselves. Then the next step is our family, friends, or our community, whatever that is, to help educate them and educate ourselves behind what it is that we should be doing. Then experience something. Get into the forest, get into the stream and the river or the ocean or into the parkland or whatever it is, and be in nature. Feel it. Calm the mind. Sense it. Listen to the birds in the early morning hours before the rush hour hits, right, when dawn is breaking. Do the things that it takes for us to feel and appreciate nature, and then take that reflection and bring it back to our family and friends and loved ones and embrace them also in the same thing. Take it a step at a time with a goal of trying to make the world a better place. In return, nature will feed us and make us better people. I'm 100% sure of that.
What a beautiful answer. It really was. So for everybody who's listening tonight and part of our show and around the world, I love that you're here on this day. and part of this energetic field and sharing in this vision and sharing in this dream, because it's all of us that are making that difference and all of us that are connected. And as Michael's sharing that in your own backyard, I remember once that I heard a song called Somewhere Far Away, and it said, every minute of every second of every day of every year, there's someone that needs your help right here, not just somewhere far away. And so as Michael's saying, in your own backyard, in your own communities, in your own neighborhoods, in your own oceans, in your own forests, in your own deserts, in your own backyards, in your own world, in your own schools and communities and consciousness and countries and this one planet of people, in your own planet, not some other star system, but the one that we have here is also our backyard. This planet is our backyard. This planet is our home. The same way that your home that you're living in your house, the planet is also our home. And we all have the responsibility. We all have the ability. We all have the gift. We all have the magic. We all have the talent. And we all have our own unique lens and seeing the beauty in the world. And we're blessed and we're gifted that Michael has spent his life sharing his vision and his dream and what he sees through his lens. And I implore you all to take a moment and look through your own personal lens and see the beauty and see the grace and see the humanity and see the love and see everything that's glorified around you. And also to look through that lens and see what might need your help.
Exactly, what might need your help, and in turn, experience the help that can come to you. That's what I do. When I go forward trying to help something, I also find that I am helped myself. The mind is sharper, the body is stronger, the joyful moments are of greater flavor because you're doing something worthwhile, really worthwhile, for every living creature and for future generations. So for me, it's living that zest and going forward with that. It's the most important thing. So it's up to us to decide what we want to do. Again, you can always contact us at planetviews.org or planetviews.com. But there's also things you can do right in your backyard, with your schools, your children, your friends, your families, others. And make that difference now, because in turn, the universe, the world, the beautiful life that we live around here can then help us become better people. I'm 100% sure of that.
Michael, thank you for being with us today. It's such a joy having you here. And for myself, Nicole Brandon, and for Michael Daly, we are wishing you a passionate life, an unlimited life, one of joy and happiness and peace and bliss, and a world in which we're all together, and a world in which we are leaving our generations and generations and generations a heaven on earth. We look forward to seeing you next week here on Passionate Living.